Hello, everybody. I'm Mike King, and coming up is a clip from episode 19 of the Freight Buyers Club podcast, produced with the kind support of Demerco Express Group. In it, I'm talking to Huaju Tan, founder of Linealytica, about the looming restructuring of the container shipping alliance system and the pros and cons of the Gemini cooperation partnership between Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd. I started by asking him whether he envisaged even more changes to the current lineups of the alliances than have already been announced.
Yeah, I definitely see room for more changes to come. Because firstly, I think the alliance game of musical chairs has not ended. If we look at the balance of power between the four new alliances, what is glaring if you compare the four new alliances is the alliance is lacking in relation to its rivals in terms of skill. And that's going to set them back materially as a serious contender in the market. And they have to plug that gap. So the first change that I would expect is that the alliance will have to come up with a solution for that gap in the capacity imbalance to be plugged. So far, the only thing that the alliance carriers have hinted at is some form of collaboration with possibly one or two of the fringe carriers. But that really isn't a long-term solution, because if you add either a One High or SM line to the alliance, that will not really move the needle very much for them, especially on the Asia-Europe and the transatlantic markets, because these fringe carriers are not even involved in that market at all. The addition of these smaller new members will only cover some of the gaps on the Trans-Pacific, but the Trans-Pacific is really the least of the alliance concern at this point. So I would expect that there has to be some more changes to come, and that could perhaps involve some tie-up with one or more of the existing alliance carriers, and this could be in the form of slot swaps or potentially also some joint services that will not be a full-fledged alliance arrangement. Now, the second change that I would expect to come is how the carriers are going to deal with the capacity raise, because the formation of Gemini, I think, has already started to trigger off a response from some of the rivals. And again, I see that each of the main carriers will have to continue to build scale as one of their core objectives. And this was a capacity raise that Maersk started back in 2011 when they first set out to build the Triple E ships. But that lead has since been taken over by MSC after Maersk decided to switch strategy in 2016. You will see already some of the responses coming from the smaller carriers. In this case, three of them has already announced some fairly aggressive expansion plans. And I see that, you know, this response is going to be inevitable, especially for those that have lagged behind the rest of the market. So if you look at the three carriers that's come up so far, that's ONE, HMM, and Hapag-Lloyd, they've all announced significant new investments between now until 2030. But what's common amongst these three is that all of these three carriers have been lagging behind the rest of the market since 2016. And what they're doing now is basically trying to catch up with the rest of the market. I see also a risk if Maersk decides to join them, because Maersk certainly is, again, one of the laggards in the market. And it would be interesting to see if they will also switch to a expansionist mode at some point in the future. So to your question, my take is that there's going to be a lot more changes to come. And the next 2 years, we'll see a lot of market action. So that's something that we also have to keep watch on.
Just for our listeners, the Gemini cooperation, right? So this is the new Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd partnership. It starts operations early next year. I love to finish a podcast on a hub and spoke system. So it was a perfect link in for me. They do plan to use a hub and spoke setup to deliver schedule reliability of something over 90%, they're promising.
It's quite a claim considering 60% schedule reliability is a bit of a rarity for carriers at the moment or even over the last few years. So are you a big fan of hub and spoke systems? Can this work?
Right. There really isn't anything to be a fan of here. There is a time and place where a hub and spoke system would work, but there will also be situations where this type of network does not work well. And so we really need to look at it and recognize it for what it does. I think the first important point to point out here is that we have had hub and spoke systems since the very early days of container shipping. So this is not a new idea at all. And for those of you old enough to remember the liner conference system, we had in the past freight rates pricing that are based on base port rates plus transport additionals for outports. And this base port and outport system was built around the hub and spoke system, and that has been around since the 1970s. So again, there's nothing that's new or novel about this system at all. Now, as the container market evolved and volumes grew, some of these outports became base ports as they receive direct calls. So today, we now see direct calls at ports such as in Thailand and Vietnam, for example. And we see also in places in Europe, places like Poland and Italy that used to be outports in the past, but they are now today part of the direct port system. So once these former feeder ports becomes direct ports, it is very hard to roll back the clock and for carriers to go back to a hub and spoke system, I think is going to be a problem. I think that we don't need to go very far back to see the last serious attempt to switch back to a pure hub and spoke system. And that is in 2011, when Maersk rolled out the Daily Maersk product for those who were in the market at that point. Now, the Daily Maersk product that Maersk introduced in 2011, that was a pure hub and spoke service because it had only 4 main ports in Asia and 3 ports in Europe. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, the Daily Maersk service did not last very long. There is a long list of reasons behind why that product failed. But I think the main problem here is that, firstly, the market isn't going to pay a premium for the improved reliability that such a product is supposed to produce. And also, the second big problem here is that the spoke system, meaning that the feeder network that you would have to operate as part of that system, that comes at a cost because your transit times and schedule reliability, although it's good on the hub ports, it's going to be worse off on the out ports. On top of that, it's an expensive network to maintain because you need to have an extensive feeder network to keep that system going. So as far as the Gemini network is concerned, I think that the hub and spoke approach is really a poor man's response to a fuller product that their rivals could deliver in the market, which Gemini cannot deliver right now because they don't have the scale and they don't have the ships available to provide a fuller range of direct port calls. So if you look more closely at the Gemini network, you will see a lot of gaps in their port coverage. So for example, on the Asia-Europe network, there is no direct calls in many key ports. For example, nothing in Le Havre, nothing in Antwerp, nothing in Southampton, nothing in Gdansk. And if you look at Asia, there is also no direct port calls in key main ports like Busan, nothing in North China, nothing in South China other than Yantian, and certainly nothing also in Vietnam and even places like Taiwan, there is no direct calls. So I think that this is going to be a problem for Gemini to compete effectively with their rivals. I think it's also going to be a problem on the Trans-Pacific If you look at the GEM work on the Trans-Pacific, it actually has a very weak Trans-Pacific product, especially going into the US West Coast. It doesn't have direct connections between South China to the Pacific Northwest, for example, a very limited coverage of places like Vietnam. And in terms of total number of services, it has only 4 weekly sailings to the West Coast. That's a very small number of direct sailings to the West Coast, because if you compare against the rivals, Ocean Alliance has at least 13 such sailings, and D Alliance will have 10. So even with a weakened D Alliance, they are going to have a significantly superior product to the US West Coast compared to what Gemini has to offer. So again, if you look at the reason behind why Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd is going for a hub-and-spoke approach, it is my belief that it's not because that approach, that hub-and-spoke network, is a superior product compared to the more diverse and connected network that their rivals can offer. I think it has more to do with their lack of scale. Again, if you look at the rate of growth that Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd has achieved since 2017, it should be clear that these two carriers are amongst the slowest growing carriers if you compare the carriers in the top 10 list. And this difference is especially stark if you compare the growth of Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd to the growth of MSC, especially over this last 5 years. And so when you don't have the scale to mount a full-fledged network, then the next best thing for both Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd is to come up with the next best solution, which is this limited hub-and-spoke network. But I think that this is going to serve as a catalyst for the next stage of market disruptions. There's certainly going to be a lot of changes in the next couple of years. There is a lot more that we can cover, but I think we have to leave that for some other time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Freight Buyers Club, produced in partnership with the Demerco Express Group. Please subscribe and follow on your platform of choice, or sign up for delivery to your inbox at thefreightbuyersclub.com. This podcast wouldn't have been possible without the fantastic editing of Karen Ball and Tom Matthews. And finally, thank you all for listening. The next episode will be with you soon.